Happy April, and welcome back to another episode of the I Teach Podcast, where we delve into educational topics like personalized learning, instructional coaching, and the Make a Moment, and where we get a chance to meet the incredible teachers, administrators, coaches, and students that are out there doing the work every day. I'm your host, Ronald Catlin, and in today's episode, I'll be joined by my fellow KSU IT coach, Max. Today, we will be talking about different ways and strategies to assess students during remote learning. And this is an interesting topic to talk about because April is usually testing season for most schools. But this year, most of the statewide testing has been canceled. And many of you are trying to find the best possible solution for yourself and your students, from video conferencing platforms to online communication. But what are you supposed to do when it comes to assessment? So that's what we are going to be talking about on today's show. So without further ado, now it's time to welcome my special guest, Max, to today's episode. Max, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ronald. I'm excited to make my podcasting debut.
Yes, welcome to the show. So how are you doing? Happy spring break. It's spring break.
Yeah, a week of spring break. Did not expect to be spending it like this in my apartment, but I'm excited to try something different.
Yeah, you know, the weather's nice, and unfortunately, we can't do much.
Exactly. It's killing my allergies, but getting through it. Yeah. Getting through it.
Yeah. My birthday is next week. So I got to see what kind of quarantine birthday I'm going to have.
We'll send you a virtual cake.
Right. That's the only thing I can take at this point. So I like to start off the show with doing an icebreaker with my guests, you know, just to lighten up the mood and get to know the guests a little bit more. So I have some questions that I'm going to ask you. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So the first question is, what's the hardest part about working virtually for you and what's the easiest?
The hardest part is definitely getting into a routine, figuring out when I needed to wake up or when I need to wake up, and not kind of breaking the routine that you already have going. When you're working from a different location, the best part is being able to walk right out into my office and not having to deal with the commute, I think.
Right. Yeah, especially with Atlanta traffic. So that's definitely an easy way of working.
Yeah.
All right. So next question. Have you ever been told you look like someone famous? And if so, who was it?
One of my students, my first year, called me Tebow. He wouldn't call me by my name, but I get Tim Tebow a lot. So I guess that's okay. I'll take it.
Tim Tebow. Oh, okay. That's interesting. And anybody else? Was it anybody else? That was the only one?
I've only ever gotten Tim Tebow. I don't know.
Wow, you do favor him. Like, yeah, I do favor him. But wait, do you think that you favor him? Or is this a thing where it's like, I wish people did not?
So as I'm a huge college football fan and I'm a Tennessee fan. So Tim Tebow is not the first quarterback I'd want to look like. But I get it. Like, I see it. It's a little frustrating to be called a rivals quarterback. I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. Okay. And the last question is, what is your most used emoji?
Most used emoji, hands down, is the wink with the tongue out. I don't know why. I even bought like a little pillow of that emoji. Yeah. So that's easily most used.
What does that emoji even mean? Like, is it more like a
ah-ha? I think that's why you use it. It goes for anything, every situation. Very easy.
That's interesting. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to move on and talk about today's topic, which is assessments during remote learning. So assessment is a key part of learning. How do you think this has changed due to remote learning, and what impact or benefits have you seen?
So yeah, it's a huge part of seeing where students are. And the one thing that I've seen a huge impact on my teachers, at least, is the impact on integrity, of taking a test. And my teachers are worried about whether students are going to be cheating, And this has actually become a huge and really beneficial conversation because it's given them an opportunity to rethink assessment and really think about what assessment can be for students in a different light. If they're not under the supervision of a teacher, how can teachers remove that barrier of, I'm not worried about a kid cheating. I'm more worried about how I can see what they're learning. So that's been a really awesome opportunity for teachers to think about assessment, I think, in what I've seen.
Okay. And I agree. I think that like remote learning is pushing us to think about, you know, multimodal assessments. If I can speak with elementary kids, I think with tools like the iPad, we can do like audio recordings and do like drag and drop activities. So we really have to question what we choose to access. And I think it's also like, it's kind of like teachers are starting to embrace a mastery measurement mindset, you know, where teachers are starting to provide a clear set of expectations and requirements. And trying to like incorporate maybe like a rubric or a checklist. And even at the end of each stage, kind of like do a questioning, planning, and drafting feedback is given. So the process of learning becomes more of the focus and not, you know, of a percentage.
Yeah.
So one of the benefits, from the teachers that I've talked to, that I have seen is that students are working at their own pace. And they can, you know, submit their work as soon as it's done. And the teachers are able to give feedback and return it to them, you know, for improvement. And that helps them because by the time they hand it in at the end of the lesson, you know, it's pretty much spot on.
Yeah, that's awesome, especially with younger learners. And I think what you said about learning on an iPad, so they're even inherently learning a new literacy as well. And maybe learning it. Instead of just playing games on it, now they're learning how they can use it for educational purposes, even going off in real world purposes with older students. I think that's a really important point.
Right. Yeah. So in what ways have you supported your school with the assessment procedures during the switch to remote learning? And how have they found the process?
We had to have like a big conversation and with how to change assessments. And a lot of teachers have been worried about, can we properly give students a passing grade? But I think that it was a really good conversation because we've moved on to the ability to give oral exams. And students being able to justify their learning and having it be that reflective process, like you were talking about, where students are able to turn work in and it might not be 100%, but that's okay because they can build up to getting 100%, which is something that's really awesome. And that mastery based learning, just like you were talking about. And there has been pushback. I think that's natural. Things are changing, but we're not just putting assessments online. And it's not just, and teachers, and we're all getting out of a routine. But I think this is the opportunity to try something different, and teachers embracing that has been kind of the light at the end of the tunnel that we're seeing how this is going to be almost a jumping off point. And it's going to be really good when we go back, hopefully in the fall next year, of how we can use these tools beyond, just this experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were saying that in addition with changing up the assessments that the teachers are thinking about including an oral portion at the end?
Yeah. So a couple of my math teachers who are worried about students' integrity and all that, have given students the classic exam. And then in order to certify the grade, so to speak, they've had to have either a Teams meeting, a Google meeting, whatever it is, with the teacher. And so the student then talks through their logic for some of the answers And in a couple of cases, teachers have skirted the multiple choice portion of the exam altogether and just given the student two equations for them to show their mastery, which is a really novel idea in terms of students don't just have to show their work on paper, but now if they talk me through it, I'm sure to be able to check off the points that they're saying so I can actually give them the grade of what they've mastered based on what they understand. So it's no longer about writing down the process, but the ability to explain, which is always what we talk about. You know, if you can teach something, that means that you understand it 100%. So that's in essence what these students are having the opportunity to do.
That's interesting. But I think that is novel, because it's really just having the teachers have that comfort of knowing that the students are not just like having assistants or they just got somebody else to do it. That is a great way.
And it also builds a relationship between the teachers and the students. So they're not kind of taking the test alone. They're taking it almost with the teacher, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I think the ways that I've supported my schools is, just providing them with tutorials, to walk through different like digital assessment setups and supporting the teacher practices that's already been put in place versus like starting something brand new and showing them new ways to enhance how they traditionally assess, but in a digital method. They seem to need me more now than ever. Answering a lot of emails, texts, and phone calls. You know, teachers like, hey, here's my number. I need you to give me a phone call, so and so. A lot of Google Meets. But it's been great, just to support the teachers as they adapt to a new way of working, or look for ways around a problem. It's just been incredible to see how, colleagues are using, technology for teaching and learning. So I just hope that they really just instill the things that they're doing now and for the future, and not just take it as, well, this is just a moment where my back was against the wall and I had no other choice.
This isn't just like packets for now. This is how we can do this in the future. And you said it, learning tools that we already have and enhancing your skills with them. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So I just hope that when we get back to the face-to-face, if we ever get back to that, when we get back to that, that they're just like, oh no, I can't use that anymore. I'm just going to go run copies and,
Hopefully they take it and use it and run with it.
Yeah. So what are some of your top tips for assessment via remote learning?
So this is obviously an opportunity, just like you said, to enhance what you already know and use what you're supposed to be using or what your district supports. And all of these products offer opportunities to individualize assessment. So that can mean anything from offering differentiated assessments and different assessments for students to offering a leveled assessment. So something that actually looks at a student's level of mastery, meets them where they are, and then assesses what they are hopefully learning in your course. That opportunity to individualize is there in every single product. And then using rubrics really effectively. This is something that I always preach, and the opportunity to use a rubric to show where students can improve. But now's that opportunity to maybe offer a couple of different rubrics for a project to show students how they can grow in that mastery-based mindset. And then the last thing is, it might be obvious or seem obvious, but flexibility. And not offering the same assessment as you would face to face as you do online, because as you do remotely, because this is a different environment. Having students take multiple choice tests might not suit your needs at this point. It's not that timed assessment anymore. I think the AP is doing it really interestingly. They're no longer giving the multiple choice assessment. It's going to be a 45-minute take home, free response essays. And that's activating a whole other group of skill sets that students have to tap into. So I think being flexible is really important, and understanding that this is a different moment. And it's more than that, it's a jumping off point, just like you said. It's not something to just use now, but it's something to use now and then build on in the future. When maybe a student misses a class, you have this resource to fall back on and say, oh, well, here's an opportunity for me to implement that in the future.
Good. Those are some good tips. With rubrics, do you think that like teachers, I know a lot of educators mostly use rubrics like in writing. Do you think because we just mostly use like a pass fail kind of system with other subjects and just if it's not like a project, do you think that's why a lot of educators don't use rubrics a lot? Because if it's just
I think
not
we
writing?
Shy away from the use of rubrics because they're so it's so easy to take a multiple choice test and see what students get right and wrong versus really embracing the gray area of where students understand parts of something, but they don't understand maybe the how to use that skill. So really diving into a rubric, not being a checklist of what students do and don't do, but students do a 7 out of 10 level of speaking or a 7 out of 10 level of math explanation, but they really nail it in their actual formulation of a problem. So how good are they at problem solving? Maybe that's a 10 out of 10, but maybe their explanation of it isn't as high. So there's different standards that we can pull in with rubrics. It's a lot broader.
Yeah. Great. So I like your tips. So the tips were individualized rubrics and flexibility. I think for me, my tips, for assessment, will be to use what you have in your school, and be consistent. You know, I think now is not the time to kind of be throwing in new things into the fire. So I think that a lot of educators now should just keep it simple and just use the reliable tools that they know and trust. I feel like that'll help everybody. And then as far as like with your, as far as with like your students, I think I'll just encourage the teachers to be positive. I think your kids are seeing you less and, you know, they're most likely desperate for your praise and approval. So I think just giving them praise as much as possible. I think in this current climate, it's like a massive achievement to be able to just stay on top of everything. So I would just encourage, you know, educators to provide, you know, next steps and get feedback to students as quickly as possible. And just try, like you said, try to correct misconceptions through voice feedback. And because constructive feedback is so important, but praising just those little things and just remind the kids that, you know,
I love the positivity point that you're making there. That's something that I don't often think about or often come back to, but being positive with kids. Yeah, that's a really great tip.
Yeah, because, you know, they're transitioning. Everybody's transitioning to like a new, you know, a new state of like working and stuff. And I think the teacher's expectations could push onto the kids a lot, and it could be jump, you know, just become a process. So it's like, you know, just, you know, be positive, give them time, you know, praise them for the little things that they're doing, you know, to get, you know, just like in the class,
exactly.
You praise them until, you know, you get, you know, it's going to be a process.
So. I think that's such a, such an unthought of point. Just be positive.
Yeah, because, you know, teachers in data, you know, it can be a lot.
Data doesn't make anybody be positive. It makes us think too much. As an English teacher.
So, as a result of remote learning, how might you or your school practice for assessment change once we return?
So here's my fingers crossed moment that we take all of this and actually use it in the future. The negative me says it's not going to change anything. But I know my role is to help be a change agent and to help students really embrace, students and teachers really embrace this style of learning and assessment ultimately. So I kind of thought of a list of different things that students should be able to do in different subjects. So how does it change the assessment? If it's an English language course, can my students hold a conversation? And if it's just a specific foreign language course, what is the level of that conversation? I think that kind of changes the outlook on, I know the SAIR verbs, and I totally butchered the Spanish language there. But yeah, foreign language. Can my student hold a conversation, and what's the level of conversation? In math, just like we were talking about, what is the level of understanding of solving a problem? And I'm going to, I might butcher this, but there is a, the middle math, and math in the middle, and the idea of having an open middle, variable. So students actually have to explain a solution. So X plus X equals 10. And students actually understanding that it could be 1 plus 9, 2 plus 8, 3 plus 7. All of those answers are correct answers. They just have to figure out how to get to that. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of an interesting thought that a lot of my math teachers have put into my head. History, can students explain cause and effect of major events that we've covered? And they have multimodality ways of doing that. And then kind of ultimately, how can we use this type of assessment in the future to really drive inquiry and drive mastery? And it's not just a high school level thing, I don't think. I think it does play into, you know, younger students and how they see the world. Can we provide this dialogue of education as opposed to kind of the sage on the stage? And we want to move to more guide on the side, helping students answer questions for themselves.
Yeah. And I think those are all like good points. And it seems like you're like moving into where the student is like actually in control of how they're showing mastery. So I like that. And I think for elementary students, I think it's, we're just moving towards having the assessments actually be like real world related, and just having that real world application, and just providing that the student can show how to use this, or just incorporating those 4 C's. So I think in elementary a lot, you see a lot of just a regular multiple choice or, you know, written exam. And we're just trying to get them just to create with all the different things that's out there, to show that they have mastered.
Yeah. Authenticity is huge. I think if you're giving students work to do remotely, the why of it and the who's going to actually look at this is huge, because I saw a Facebook post the other day from a dad whose daughter was having to recite the 4 types of erosion. And he said, I don't see the point in this. I'm going to teach my daughter sign language. I think that's as valuable a skill as knowing the 4 types of erosion, because I certainly don't know the 4 types of erosion at this point. If there's any geology teachers listening, I'm really sorry. but he wants to teach, he's like, I'm going to teach my daughter sign language. And that to me is a lifelong skill. And I totally agree. We need to start thinking about how these things are actually authentic. And just like you said, how can we make them relatable to kids?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But some of my, colleagues, they have been using just the audio and screen recording to give feedback, and they have seen the benefit for students and how easy it is to do. So, and I think that sometimes we just need to be thrown into an alternate teaching role to allow for different approaches to shine for those who may lack in confidence or understanding. So it's great to see that the potential is becoming a reality. So hopefully it will just stick with those teachers.
I hope it does.
So is there anything lost by losing state assessments for the year? I think that for me, I just think that we lost data. I think that's it. I think it's more politics to it, but I think that we just lost data, because I think data is a lot when we talk about schools and all of the politics behind it of like funds and all of that stuff. So I just say we lost.
I'm going to get super philosophical. but like that data, and I agree, we did lose data. but hope and the teacher in me is just like, yes, this is awesome. We're not doing state testing and we're not doing this stuff for a year. Hopefully that allows us to take a step back and to figure out what the good data is and what the bad data is. And, you know, do we really need to know student reading scores in second grade or do we need to know it in fifth grade? Do we need to know student levels of math for 7 years? Or is there a point that we can pin, or is there a spot that we can pinpoint and say, this is actually really important? It might also be an opportunity for state officials to understand what important testing is and what non-essential testing is as well. Because like you talked about, all the funding, all the No Child Left Behind Act stuff, Race to the Top, there's a ton of it that's tied into this. And maybe understanding that teachers are experts in their fields, and teachers, hopefully we gain that teachers are the experts, and we understand that we can kind of create these graduation levels for ourselves as long as we do it within proper guidelines. And hopefully it's not just that data that we lose, but we also lose this mindset of we have to test everything all the time, every year.
All right. Well, that's a lot of tests.
I mean, it's unbelievable. When you talked about joining, it was April is testing month. We need a whole month of it. Like, that's ridiculous. All my schools are gearing up for it. And, you know, it's great to see them thinking, oh, now I have to assess in a different way. And my kids aren't worried about these tests.
Yeah. So, and even just with being in the classroom, I just remember like testing was every month or some kind of benchmark or some kind of, you know, district test is coming at you. Just to see how your school is doing or just to see how you can compare in the state or, you know, just looking at. So it's like these kids
data are meetings. Tested a Did lot. You have data meetings? Those were awful.
Yeah.
What was the point of them? every 2 weeks, I think we had them. How was this student doing here? Yeah.
How are we going to go back in? How are we going to go back and make sure these kids are meeting these standards and just a lot of stuff. So it's like, woo. It's actually just a whole nother world.
But it's exciting and I'm hopeful about it. I think, I don't know. That's what I take away from it as much negative as we can put into it. And it's been difficult. I think there's a lot of opportunity and
yeah,
like you were saying, it's a jumping off point. It's not a one and done kind of thing. This is something that we can use in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just hope that I'm excited to see what it is or what it does come to in the future. Hopefully I'm optimistic about it. So I will say that I'm more optimistic.
Yeah,
about it.
We can take these possibilities. So, and this is an experience that's really pushed a lot of teachers into the realm of digital. This might have been one of the bigger pushes to do like, hey, what is this good for? And now they're seeing that.
Yeah. All right. So I want to thank you all for joining us on another episode of the iTeach Podcast. Max, again,
thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, of course. So the listeners, be sure to subscribe and rate the podcast and also leave a review. Max, where can
they can find me
you on
at
Twitter?
The Real Mr. Gertz, GERTZ. And that's where I'm at.
The Real Mr. Gertz. All right, guys. So there you have it. Also, remember to follow KSUI Teach on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And also check out our Pinterest page at KSUI Teach for great resources and guides and walkthrough on different tech tools. And until next time, peace and love.
The iTeach Podcast is brought to you by the Instructional Technology Coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University with the cooperation of the Instructional Technology Department and the Bagwell College of Education. You can reach out to us for more information, questions, or comments at our website, iteach.kennesaw.edu, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach.